look at it. We're thankful that your Spirit carried men along so that each and every part of your word is exactly what you wanted said in the way you wanted it stated. And we trust that that is even true of the copies that we have today, that they faithfully represent what was originally written by those men. And help us as we look at some of these things tonight to appreciate these things. We thank you for it. Amen. When I look at this, what we're going to look at tonight is we're going to look at some statements about faith in the Old Testament. And the reason we're going to look at this is because I want to, our Hebrew word for faith is where we get our word amen from. But in the Hebrew, this particular form that means faith is aman. It'd be with two A's rather than an A and an E. Aman is the way that would be pronounced. And Hebrew, a Hebrew verb potentially can be written in one of seven stems. That is, seven forms that say something different about it. There is, you don't have to know all this stuff, but Gary probably knows some of this because you took Hebrew many years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if we break some of the rust loose. But there's the kal stem, which is just active. It just, this is the way it is. There is the niphel stem, which is passive and middle, more passive than middle. So that means you're personally involved in something or it's in your interest. There's the PL, which is an intensive. There's the PUL, which is an intensive passive. There's the HIFPAL, which is reflexive. There's the HIFIL, which is causative. You cause something to happen. And then there's the HAFAL, which is causative intensive. Now, I can guarantee you, though those seven stems exist, not every Hebrew verb occurs in all seven of those stems. And the word aman is an example of that. It occurs in only three stems. It occurs in the kal, in the niphal, and in the hifiel. Okay. Again, you don't need to know all that, but this is what's interesting. This is a study that I started back in 2013. I ended up writing a paper for the forum on this, and one of the things that to me was really interesting, because I'd never really looked in depth at the verb believe in the Old Testament until that time. I mean, I'd looked at verses, but I hadn't actually noticed. And what I did was I printed out I did a translation, printed out all these verses that have the verb aman, and then went through every one of them, and I used different highlighters, different color highlighters, and I could show it, if you wanted to see the stuff, I could show it. I got it in a notebook down here. But I went through and marked them by the stem that they occurred in, by different words that were used. Like every verse in which it says, has the Hebrew particle lo, which is no or not. So don't believe. Sometimes it's a command, don't believe that. And sometimes it's a statement of they didn't believe. We'll look at a couple of those. Out of all of these, I want to look first at the kal, because we're going to look at the kal participle here. We're not going to spend a lot of time, but this is an illustration of the background of the word aman in the kal. Participle is, this would be the way, if you were going to describe the Fanning family, you could use a noun, grocer. But you would also, probably more commonly in Hebrew, you would use a participle, which if you translate it really literally into English, you would say the ones who sell groceries or the ones selling groceries. And you describe a person by their activity. Okay, that's what a participle is, or one way of looking at a participle, the way that works. So we're going to look first in the book of Numbers chapter 11. And you're going to look at this and you are... And this word occurs, this particular form occurs a couple of times. We're only going to look at one. But in Numbers chapter 11, Numbers 11 and verse 12, this is Moses talking here with regard to this. Verse 11 says, Moses said to the Lord, why have you been so hard on your servant, and why have I not found favor in your sight? You have laid the burden of all this people on me. Was it I who conceived all these people? Was it I who brought them forth, that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse? Now, the word nurse, that, if you have a New American Standard, that word nurse is our participial form of the word aman, which is the word to believe. And we would not understand what this means, but a nurse, notice it says, as a nurse carries a nursing infant, because the expression nurse carries, it's literally a person that carried a child like this. So you're thinking about how a mother or somebody in charge of an infant would carry a child. And that's the base, that's the background idea of the word aman, is that which supports or carries something else. We talked about this on Sundays 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the vocabulary of faith. And so this is a participial form. So literally, this one that says a nurse literally is one carrying a child. We translate it nurse, but literally it's one carrying or supporting a child. It occurs again, we're not going to look at it, but it's used of Naomi in the book of Ruth, that she was the one that was the nurse to Ruth's child. It's used in 2 Samuel of the nurse that tripped carrying Mephibosheth when they were fleeing the palace and dropped him, resulting in his feet being injured. So it's used a few times in the Old Testament of a person that carries children, cares for, but not just cares for, but carries children in that way. Okay. Turn to 2 Kings 18. See, if... And I would venture to say, this is one of the places where if you have somebody that can look at Greek and Hebrew and kind of look, and you could do this. You could look up that word nurse. You could look at it in a Strong's Concordance. You could get online and find out what the background it is. But the thing is, most people would look at it and they'd see the word nurse and they would just think, oh, a nurse, a person that cares for somebody else, not understanding that they would never in any way think that it ever is related to the word believe, but it is actually the verb that is translated believe in other places, but in the cal form, only in the cal stem, does it ever have this meaning. It never has this meaning anything other than the cal. So in the cal, it only has these kind of ideas. In the cal, it never means believe. It's never used with that sense. Okay, these are some of the things I didn't know until I did this study back several years back. But in 2 Kings chapter 18, 2 Kings chapter 18, and look with me at verse 16. And it says in verse 16, at that time Hezekiah cut off the doors of the temple of the Lord and the doorpost which Hezekiah king of Judah had overlaid and gave it to the king of Assyria. Now, the word doorposts there is the same word that's translated nurse, same word that's that we also believe, because what did doorposts do? They carried the lintel. They carried the weight of the wall up above it, and they carried the weight of the doors that were hanging on it. So if you stop and think about it, even though that image doesn't sound at all like a person caring for a child, it really is the same thing. It's something that is carrying something else, not itself. It's carrying something else, and the doorposts carry that lintel. And we would look at that word doorpost, and we would say, well, that's a noun. But it's not a noun. It's actually a verb. It's a participle. Okay? And doorpost is fine. It's not a bad translation any more than nurse was a bad translation. It's not a bad translation. It's just showing you that there's a different sense, that which carries or supports. Okay. What this does for us, however, is gives us an illustration of the Old Testament meaning of the word aman. That aman had the idea as its kind of its base idea of that which supported or carried something. So that if we were to go to Genesis 15:6, which we're not going to turn there tonight, we did that, done that a couple times already, and we'll probably be back there on Sundays. But it said that, you know, God makes a promise to Abraham, and it says, and Abraham believed God. And when it talks to us about believing God, what he's saying is, he's looking at God as being one that firmly supports that promise. He doesn't look at that promise as tottering out there. He looks at that promise as fully supported, solid. Okay? Think of the doorposts that Hezekiah, or that they have built into the temple. There's a lot of weight on there, because remember that temple was made out of stone. That lintel that's across the top, there's a lot of weight being borne on those doorposts. So very strong. So that's from the cal. In the cal form, as I said, cal form is never, in any places it occurs, does it ever mean believe? If we tried to translate it believe, it would be misleading. It wouldn't really give you the sense that was behind the word. No, the next form that we're going to look at, and this word, let's put it this way, this verb occurs in the Old Testament 96 times. 96 times we have the verb aman in its different forms. And we have several in the cal, not a lot, but a few. 44 times, however, it occurs in the niphal. And the niphal is the passive form. And so as we're going to look at a couple of examples of this, the idea of this is something that makes something firm. Somebody makes something else firm in this way. So let's turn back to Genesis chapter 42. Genesis chapter 42. This is the situation where Joseph's brothers don't yet know who he is, okay, down there. And so they tell him, let's go to verse 14. And Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here." So this is what he wants. He wants him to bring his youngest brother down. So now go up to verse 20. And it says, so they can go down. Oh, down to verse 20. Okay, yeah. It's up on the next page to me. So. Okay. Sorry. "And bring your youngest brother to me so your words may be verified and you will not die." And they did so. The word verified is that verified is okay. I'm not going to argue that it's a bad translation. But the idea behind that with the niphal is that your words might be made stable or firm. In other words, right now, I don't think Joseph knows what's going on. He's kind of playing this because he's trying to find some means of getting his younger brother and his father down there to Egypt is what he's trying to accomplish in this. And he also kind of wants to feel his brothers out and find out, you know, what they are. Are they still the characters they were that sold him into, that wanted to kill him and then sold him into slavery, you know. Is this still what he's dealing with? These boys have grown up. It's a hard thing for us to realize sometimes that punk kid that you had in school that you thought, yeah, you're going to spend the rest of your life in jail if you keep on this path. You meet him as an adult and you're going, wow, you actually turned out to be a reasonable, nice adult, you know. Surprise, surprise, that happens. This is what he wants. And so, what? I wasn't looking at Josh, no. But he says that your words may be verified. So in other words, I want your words to be firm, implying that your words aren't firm right now. Your words are highly questionable. Okay, this is from, you know, from the perspective that these people wouldn't have thought that Joseph was coming from. Let's see. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 7. I'm not going through all these. I've got quite a few. Deuteronomy 7.
Hey, I'm not that reasonable.
Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy 7. And we'll just read verse 9. We don't need to read more. It says, "Know therefore," this is verse 9 of Deuteronomy 7, "know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, who keeps his covenant and his loving kindness to 1,000 generations with those who love him and keep his commandments. The idea there being that he's the faith, they translate this faithful. In other words, he's the sure, dependable one. He's the God that you can count on the fact that he's going to do this thing. You and I could sign covenants all day long. We could have passed through animals and shook on it and whatever people did in making covenants, and people break covenants. That's why you have lawyers, right? To try to make sure you go over that and then turn around and try to go after the person for breaking their end of the deal, things like that. But God does not do that, and God is the faithful God. So here we actually have this word translated faithful. And the word faithful is definitely a form of our word aman, but it occurs in a different form, and we won't be looking at that tonight. 2 Samuel chapter 7. When I have you turn to 2 Samuel chapter 7, what are you going to find there? Do you know? You have the Davidic covenant in 2 Samuel 7. Exactly. In 2 Samuel chapter 7, I just went over these earlier today, and I'm trying to remember. I think I know which word this is, but I gotta look at this one up here. Yeah, 2 Samuel chapter 7, it says, verse 16, it says, "And your house and your kingdom shall endure," and it's the word that's translated endure in your Bibles, in there. Literally, in the NIFL, it will be made firm or faithful. It's not going to be a tottering, perhaps, kingdom. And he's looking at this in terms of, I mean, did the kingdom of David have problems in the past? Yeah. And eventually there wasn't anybody from the family of David sitting on the throne even. It went on for quite some time. And there hasn't been anybody sitting on the throne of David now for well over 2,000 years. Okay, because even when they returned, they ended up having other people put in there, but they didn't replace a king after the return in the land. But when Jesus Christ comes and his kingdom is established, which is what he's looking off to here in the Davidic covenant, that kingdom in that regard is going to be, it's going to endure, it's going to be firm. It's going to be, and it's nifal, because it's passive, it's going to be made firm. Something else is going to cause it to be firm or solid or steady. Psalm 78. I got two more in this regard that I want to look at here. Psalm 78. And we have this wording twice in Psalm 78. Pardon me again. Should have went through. I didn't have this Bible when I was looking through this, and so I should have marked these better to make sure I had the right ones. Psalm 78 and verse 22. Am I looking at the right? I've got these under the wrong place. These are not supposed. These are not nifals. So forget that. Forget that. Okay. That is not the one we want. Isaiah 49. I wrote it under the wrong heading. Isaiah, what did I say, 49? Mm-hmm. Isaiah 49 in verse 7. Verse 7 says, "Thus says the Lord, the Redeemer of Israel and his Holy One, to the despised one, to the one abhorred by nations, to the servant of rulers, kings shall see and arise, princes shall bow down, because," here it is, "because of the Lord, who is faithful," or the one who is sure, "the Holy One of Israel, who has chosen you." Okay. I tried not to have two that illustrated exactly the same way, but I did. So we've got a couple in there about God's faithfulness in here. but God's the one that's sure. Now, remember, the nifal form of this word, verb occurs 44 times. So 44 times out of 96 occurrences of the word aman, 44 times it's not believe, it's be sure, stable, or firm. Yeah. The cal occurs just a handful of times. It doesn't make up. So the ones where we actually have the word in the last sense, hifil, which is causative now. Okay. Now the difference between the nifal and the causative, the nifal would be to say, Tim was made firm. That would be a nifal. Causative would be somebody caused that to happen. The emphasis is on another subject causing somebody else to do this. So the emphasis would be on that God causes this to be true. And this is the form. Only in the hifil form does this word ever mean believe. Okay. And to me, this was interesting when it's always interesting when you go through a study on this thing and certain things pop out and you're like, huh, look at that. I didn't know this. Now, of those, 30 times, okay, 30 of the times that the word believe occurs in the Old Testament, it occurs with a particle that means no or not, meaning 30 times of the few occurrences that are left where it's actually believe, 30 of them are they did not believe or are told not to believe. I want to look at just a couple of examples. We looked at a couple of these in Numbers on Sunday, so we're not going to go back to those. But turn to, let's see, where we're in Isaiah. Let's go to Judges. Judges chapter 11. Judges chapter 11. Let's just go to verse 19. It'll help us pick up enough context. You're going back through Israel's. This is a rehearsal of Israel's time coming to the land. Okay, that's what it is. So it's in verse 19. It says, "And Israel sent messengers to Sihon, the king of the Amorites, the king of Heshbon. And Israel said to him, 'Please let us pass through your land to our place.'" But Sihon did not, now trust is our verb here, did not trust Israel to pass through his territory. So Sihon gathered all his people and camped in Jahaz and fought with Israel. Now, they're asking to pass through. They're not asking to go live in the land. They're not asking to raid the land. They're just asking to pass through. And we're not even going to allow you to pass. And I'm sure that there was a trade route that went right through their land. And lots of people came. But normally, you didn't have traveling on the trade route 1.3 to 1.7 million people with all their livestock and everything. And so he doesn't, our English Bibles say Sihon did not trust Israel. This word that's translated trust is our word that would mean believe. So what it's saying is Sihon did not believe or did not consider them to be faithful or dependable. In other words, yeah, you're going to come into our land and your animals are going to graze everything and there won't be a speck of grass left for our livestock when you get done going through. You're going to come through our land and you're probably going to raid. You're going to come through our land and you're going to, you know, steal from us. You're going to take advantage of us. So no, I won't let you go through. And our Bibles translate it trust because in our minds, that's kind of what's going on. But it is a form of the word meaning to cause. He did not cause Israel to be that which would be solid. So in other words, he didn't believe them. That's what it's saying. He didn't believe that they would just pass through. That's really what he's saying. So we can translate it trust. But I really think it should believe, you can come back and you can demonstrate that he didn't believe that they were just going to pass through the land. That's his problem here. And I think it interpretively, when you get that idea, it kind of flavors a little bit of why Sihon does this. He doesn't think they're just going to pass through. Well, normally if you have 1.3 to 1.7 million people marching up, coming up, your border and they want to come through. That's almost like looking at an army, isn't it? You know, and I don't, it's been a while. We haven't read through that part of the Old Testament where they go through and they, and Israel counts up all the men of war from all the tribes. And it's a substantial chunk of people.
They didn't have a wall?
Us fighting men, yeah. And see, that's why they kind of think 1.3, because they figured a lot of those men, since they were 20 years and up, most of them probably were married. And 1.7, because if you were married, commonly usually had children. So this why that we really don't know in total how many people were there, but those are the suggestions. Well, let's go to 2 Kings chapter 17. I don't want to spend a lot of time, but to me, it was shocking when I did this, how many instances of the word believe in the Old Testament are negative. And they don't believe, or they didn't, a person did not believe. Now, in 2 Kings chapter 17, you have a rehearsal here of why the northern tribes were taken away into captivity. That's what this is. So he's going over a rehearsal about why this happened. And it says, just very quickly then, in verse 14, well, let's go back to verse 13. Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah through all of his prophets and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways. Keep my commandments, my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers, which I sent to you through my servants the prophets. However, they did not listen, but stiffened their neck like their fathers, who did not believe in the Lord their God. And here, if you understand the Hiphil sense, this idea of to cause, they did not look at God as one that was firm or dependable. That'd be the causative idea. They did not cause in their minds God to be firm or dependable, to stand behind not only his promises. Well, let's call it his promises. Because you can promise your kid. My wife always said this, when you're dealing with children, you never threaten, you promise. You don't cut that out. We are going to the car. And by going to the car, that's a metaphor for, because you don't say in the store you're going to spank, because then they haul your kids off. So you tell them, we're going to the car. Your kids know that's code for it. You're going to go to the car and get a spanking. See, you promise that. And so they didn't consider God to be dependable. To do what? Well, either to honor the positive promises or the negative promises.
I just said, keep it up. When you get home, you'll be happy you did that.
So, again, and we have several times in the Old Testament where they don't believe. But they're not all that. We have times in which people don't believe because they're told, don't believe in that. Don't have confidence. Don't look at that person as dependable. In that sense, okay? But we do have a handful of times that it says that they don't believe in God. We looked at a couple of those on Sunday. But we do have several Old Testament passages that are positive. Genesis 15, 6 is one of those. But let's turn over to Psalm 27. Psalm 27. And verse 13. Psalm 27. And again, this is a psalm of David. And as David is looking at this, I want to go back to verse 11, where he says, teach me your way, O Lord. Lead me in a level path because of my foes. Do not deliver me over to the desire of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen against me, and such as breathe out violence. And it says, unless I had, notice, believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Yes, wait for the Lord. But he says, unless I'd believe. So here's a situation. What?
I don't
your, how does your Bible translate?
I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the
I
Lord.
I believe that I shall. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
He, oh, right there.
What verse is it?
Verse 13.
Chapter 27.
Yeah. Well, the New American Standard has added words at the beginning. It says, I would have despaired. But really, it's just that unless, and that's the way they're looking at it.
King
but
James, I had fainted.
So I had fainted.
Italic.
Yeah. But then they actually are indicating, but contrast to that, he says, I believed. I believe that I would see the goodness of the Lord. In other words, he was confident he could actually put faith or count God or the hiphil, cause God in his mind. You're not actually making God faithful. It's the way you're counting God to be. Like Abraham, when he looks at God's promise and he counts God to be faithful to that promise. And here David says he actually believed that he would see the goodness of the Lord. Now that has to do with, has to believe a promise from God. That if he did the right thing, God would honor that promise. And he would be able to witness, see God's goodness. That's what David was expecting in there. And so that's a positive sense of this word believe that we have here. Turn to Psalm 106. I skipped over my introductory verse. I had it covered up under my Bible here. We'll go back. We'll go back and look at it. But this is an illustration from Psalm or from Exodus 14. Now, we looked at this path. We looked at Exodus 14 on Sunday, but this is a reiteration of it where it's talking about, again, a rehearsal of Israel and what God had done with them. And it talks about verse 3 or verse 9 of Psalm 106. Thus he rebuked the Red Sea and it dried up. And he led them through the deeps as through the wilderness. So he saved them from the hand of the one that hated them and redeemed them from the hand of the enemy. The waters covered their adversaries. Not one of them was left. Then they believed his words and they sang his praise, which is exactly what we saw in Exodus. When they saw what God did, then they believed. Because remember, frequently in the Old Testament, faith or believing followed sight. Keep in mind, they don't have this supernaturally produced faith that you and I have as part of the fruit from the Spirit. They had to see things. And we looked at that even with Jesus. Even Jesus said that. You need to keep on believing. Or you need to keep on seeing so that you might believe. Get the right order there. So they believed his words. In other words, they then caused his words to be true. Obviously in their mind. You don't make God true. But you can count that to be true, and that's what they had done. Let's go back to 1 Samuel, because this I always like to kind of start with a theologically neutral passage, and this is because it's not about God.
We're at
1 Samuel 27. This was supposed to be the introductory verse, but I had it my Bible had it covered up. This is when David is running from Saul. This is interesting. It wasn't that long before this, I don't know how many, a few years before this, that David had stood down Goliath. And the whole Philistine army standing there on the other side of that valley and done this. Now, so here David, you know, you would think he'd be considered an enemy to the Philistines. But in his desperation to save himself from the hand of Saul, he fled, it says, verse 1, then David said to himself, now I will perish one day by the hand of Saul. There's nothing better than for me to escape into the land of the Philistines. He's actually going to go to the land of the Philistines. This is 27, 1 Samuel 27. And if we look down here, let's go down to verse 8. Now David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites and the Gerizzites and the Amalekites, for they were the inhabitants of the land from ancient times, as you come from Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. And David attacked the land and did not leave a man or woman alive. He took away the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, the camels, the clothing. And he returned and came to Achish. And now Achish said, Where have you made a raid today? And David said, against the Negev of Judah, and against the Negev of the Jeremelites, and against the Negev of the Kenites. And David did not leave a man or woman alive to bring to Gath, saying, lest they should say about us, saying, so has David done, and so has been his practice all the time. Yeah, he has lived in the country of the Philistines. In other words, he wasn't really helping the Philistines, but he has actually sought protection under Achish, king of Gath. And remember, where was Goliath from? Gath. Okay. Yeah, we should have gone back up to verses 2 and 3, and we could have seen that. But notice verse 12. So Achish believed David. In other words, he looks at David, and he counts David to be dependable. He believes what David says. When David says, yeah, we went out and made these raids, and we brought his livestock back, He does, and David doesn't leave anybody alive, so people can go back and go, well, yeah, we had people that came and took, and it was David and his men. When Achish finds out that such and such a city was raided and these people were all killed, he doesn't have any idea who did it, because there's nobody left alive to tell on David. And so Achish believes, and that's actually...
The thing here is that he goes and raids the Geshurites, Gerzites, and Amalekites.
Yeah, these people that are living in the Philistine areas. I don't know that they were Philistine people, but they were at least allies with the Philistines against Israel at that time.
Okay, but then he tells Achish, whatever, that he went. Okay, what is the Negev?
The Negev simply means in the south. It's the Hebrew word for south.
So he says against the south of Judah and the Jerahmeelites and Kenites.
Yeah.
Those people that lived in the land of the Jews more?
I couldn't speak to that. I wouldn't be able to answer that, sorry.
But Achish believed him, but that he was dependable, but he wasn't.
He wasn't really being a person that was...
dependent. I mean, he was tricking him.
He was,
but,
yeah.
But mm-hmm. Achish believed him and thought he was dependable.
Right. Yeah. What? Or you said psych.
Find out where these places, because then they give up Judah. That sounds like
the southern portion of Judah. I'm sure probably with some work probably could find out exactly where all these locations were that he had been to.
So it sounds like he's telling him, yeah, I was up fighting against the Jews.
May have been that, but I doubt when it gives the names of those people, none of those actually indicate that they were any of the tribes of Israel.
Right.
Against the Negev of Judah and against the Negev that so maybe given the so he's given perhaps the impression that he's
going against his own
people when he's not going against his own people. In fact, remember eventually when they go off to fight against Israel, David and his men don't go off in that battle.
Yeah,
they actually go and yeah. Let's turn to Jonah chapter 3. Jonah 3. Jonah chapter 3. And when Jonah finally obeys God and ends up going down, it says verse 1, now the word of the Lord came to Jonah the second time, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, proclaim to it the proclamation, which I'm going to tell you. So Jonah rose, went to Nineveh according to the word of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, 3-day walk, probably meaning to be able to go back and forth. You just don't walk through the middle of the city and you've declared your message. You need to kind of move about in the city. So probably 3 days walk meant to be able to get all around in the city and do what he was doing. It took 3 days to do this because they know from the background that the city of Nineveh didn't take 3 days to walk across it from one side to the other.
And it says the circumference was 60 miles.
60 miles around. Mm-hmm. So...
It took him 3 days to get to it?
No, it's talking about for him to get around within the midst of the city here. So Jonah began to go through the city 1 day's walk, and he cried out and said, yet 40 days, Nineveh will be overthrown. So he goes enough of a distance that he's in there, and he's in a place where he can actually communicate. And then the people of Nineveh believe, notice it says, and they believe in God. And they call the fast and put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. And they do this, because remember down there, verse 9, who knows, God may turn and relent and withdraw his burning anger so that we shall not perish. But the important thing here for us in our study is verse 5, is that they believed in God. They causative verb, caused God to be dependable to the promise that he was going to destroy the city because of the way they were. And they change because of it. And the city goes on to live another, goes on to exist another 100 years before God brings, before it goes back down where it came from, and God then finally brings destruction on it. And we talked about that a few years back when we were going through the minor prophets. So significant here is that they believe God. They count him to be true, this idea, to be dependable to his promise that he made. Last one is in 2 Chronicles 20. Last one we're looking at. There are other places.
20?
20, yes. Well, this isn't the last one. There's one last one I wanted to look at that I didn't, I just realized. Verse 20, it says, "And though, and they rose early in the morning and went out to the wilderness of Tekoa." This has to do with Jehoshaphat. Remember, Jehoshaphat was a good king from Judah. He's the one, remember, when Ahab, they're going to go out and they're going to do, they're going to go to battle, and Jehoshaphat goes, "Well, don't you have a prophet of God?" He looks around, he goes, "None of these are prophets of God. Don't you at least have a prophet of God?" And Ahab goes, "Well, yeah, I have a prophet, but I don't like him because he never says anything good about me." This is the Jehoshaphat that is looking in this way, speaking here. And so it says, "And they rose early in the morning, went out in the wilderness of Tekoa. And when they went out, Jehoshaphat stood and said, 'Listen to me, O Judah, inhabitants of Jerusalem. Put your trust,'" or literally, "believe in the Lord your God, and you will be established." You'll be firm. "Believe in his prophets and succeed." Two times he uses the word believe, both of them in a hiphil form. Once believe in his prophets, and once believe in him. In other words, count what the what his prophets have said to be true, count what he has said to be true, and stand and do this. And so Jehoshaphat here is encouraging these people to actually put their faith in God and put their faith in God's prophets that have spoken God's truth, God's plans to them. And again, the idea of the hiphil is they're causing this to be true in these cases. Now the last one. I kind of skipped over this. Isaiah 28. Right? Isaiah 28. Isaiah 28. A verse that it ends up being quoted in the New Testament, which gives us an understanding of what God was getting at back here as he's talking about what he's going to do through captivity and all of these things and the judgments that are coming upon them. And he says in verse 16, Isaiah 28:16, "Therefore thus says the Lord, behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a tested stone, a costly or valuable cornerstone for the foundation that is placed firmly. And he who believes in it will not be," and most of us will not be ashamed. Shamed is fine, because the New American Standard translates this disturbed. But that idea of ashamed literally means that which is kind of worried and hurried, that which is like, oh, like this. And you just kind of, you don't think clearly in that. He says, you know, the one that believes in that, in that cornerstone, which happens to be, according to Peter, happens to be Jesus Christ. We're also told that by Paul in the book of Romans. So as you look at all these examples of different forms of the word aman, we've seen, hey, there's a form of the word aman that is like talking about a thing that is firm, a nurse that carries a child, a doorpost that hold up a lintel like that. We've seen the idea of something that is made firm. We've looked at a form of the word aman that means a thing that is made firm. And then, and only in this last form, this causative form we call the hiphil, does the word mean believe. And consistently, I think it should be translated believe. There are some places where our Bibles, like right here, in 2 Chronicles, where New American Standard translates it trust. But I still think it should be translated believe. And the causative means you're causing God to be dependable. In your mind, you're causing it. It's you're not you're not changing how, whether God's dependable or not. You're not changing whether what the prophet said is dependable or not. It's in your mind you're causing it to be true. Now, that's an interpretation. That's not built into the verb. But obviously, the causative sense of it can't be mean that you're making God dependable, because you don't make God dependable. That's his nature. He's a God that is true. And because he's true, he is dependable. Absolutely. But, you know, God is always dependable, whether we appreciate that fact or not. So the causative sense is what you do with it, how you relate to what God is doing. Which is then, but that's, as I hopefully you see, that's kind of an interpretation in looking at that. Now, all of that then, just in closing, to say that we have some examples of situations in which people believed in God. We have a lot of examples in which it tells us that people did not believe in God, did not consider God to be dependable or faithful. We actually have more of those than we have in the Old Testament of people that did believe in God. In the Old Testament, it's those statements. We also have a book that refers to the Old Testament, Hebrews 11, that goes through and selects some events that I would not have understood to be faith had I not had Paul tell me, oh, that was an act of faith, that was an act. Now, some of us might have been able to glean some of those things out of there, but some of us would not have been able to glean those things out of there. We're not going to go over that tonight. We've spent our time looking at this. I'm just trying to say, to me, it's shocking when you look at the Old Testament, the dearth, the lack of solid examples of faith in God in the Old Testament itself, using the language of faith. We have examples of Joshua and Caleb. Obviously, they believe God, but it doesn't use that word, believe God. But they go and they give an example of doing it. So sometimes we say faith in the Old Testament, not by using the word believe, but by what we actually read happened in a situation like that. And I think that that's, hopefully that's helpful in you coming to the Old Testament and thinking about these things. Although, I would say this, I would say this in conclusion. I think one of the reasons we don't have a lot of examples is because Israel's history is dominated more by unbelief than by belief. And I think that that's a very significant thing. And we can point our
finger. That's true in the church age as well.
And I was going to say, I think we can point our finger at Israel really easily, but think about how many believers today walk by sight and not by faith in God's promises. The very thing that Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians 5:7. And remember, we're in the dispensation of grace. We always hound on the fact that Christians don't live by grace. They live under law. Well, if you're not living by grace, another thing that goes hand in hand with that is you're also not living by faith. And if you're not living by grace and you're not living by faith, the third thing that goes with that, which is actually the command that Christ gave us, is you're not living in love. So it's like we've got these three things in here that, as Christians, kind of notorious for neglecting. And all three of them were things that the New Testament makes pretty clear that this is kind of the way our lives ought to be, things that ought to characterize our lives. And so, like I said, you don't see a lot of great examples of faith in the Old Testament. Oh, man, but we're better than them. Well, not necessarily. Even though, in reality, we've been given the ability to have faith. We don't have to have self-generated faith. We've actually been given faith as part of the fruit from the Spirit. And yet, how often do we follow the lead of the Spirit so that we actually our lives are characterized by that fruit that he produces in us, and we actually are believing God's promises? Not nearly as much as we would think. So, in fact, I would stick my neck out one step further. Sometimes what we call faith in the church isn't faith, it's presumption. It's people that have come up in their minds with what they think is what's out there, and they kind of put their head down and rush through things that isn't even what God really wants, and he's never made a promise with regard to that matter or not. So, okay, any comments or questions?